Good morning, everyone. For those who don't know me, I'm Gary McSweeney, and I teach at the Living Wisdom School. And this is Helen Purcell, the director of the school. And it's a great blessing to be here today to share with you the teachings of Yogananda. And this topic, the mystery of the avatar, I strung together just a whole bunch of small stories, and I think it might go back to when I was a small boy going to church, and one of my favorite things of Mass was the parables, because I understood them. And it just made sense to me, the parables, you know, the mustard seed or the prodigal son, you would just hear them again and again, and slowly you would kind of, you know, apply them to your own life and maybe find sources of inspiration. So I just have a whole bunch of stories today about the avatar. I Googled it, of course, and all the first sites are all about the movie. Then the second sites are about a self-help group. Someone took out a trademark on the term avatar some years back. Going down a little bit further, there's apparently a band called Avatar, and they have some songs out. And then to get to the true wisdom of the ages, Wikipedia has the definition, the descent of spirit in human form. So I was going to begin with our chronology of our Christmas celebration here in Palo Alto. And it starts every year with a Christmas concert. And this year's was on a Sunday afternoon. And Karen and the choir sang some different songs this year, Mendelssohn, some of Swami's songs. And then they ended with Handel's Hallelujah Chorus. And it's something that everyone is familiar with, but I've come to it much later than everyone else. I never heard it when I was a kid for some reason. So it's still fresh to me. And it's just an amazing piece of music, and it's rousing, and it's the lyrics, and it's the music all come together. And the story is that when Handel was writing it down, his big challenge was that he could not write it down fast enough because he was hearing the music. He wasn't composing it. He was literally just writing it down. It was like it was given to him. And this is all about the avatar and how this energy flows through Christ 2,000 years after his death. And then we have the 8-hour meditation where we sit in here together, and I looked around this year and some of the people I've been doing it with now for 20 plus years, and we come together for just a total day in silence, and we just sit here, get here at 10, we leave when it's dark, people go up at the end and they do their pronouns, and it's just a day of total inward devotion to Christ. Then we go to the Christmas Eve service. And it's a wonderful devotional service again. Starts at 10 p.m., takes us to midnight. Many different elements. The life mantra. When the choir was first learning the life mantra, the story goes, they were right here practicing it. And they had finished it. And they had all stopped singing. And they could all still hear it. It was continuing in the ether. I don't know. It was so beautiful. And then Todd singing the song, Christ, the Night Divine. But then the next day is really a treat, and I think a lot of people have figured it out. But this year's was really blessed. It was the Christmas Day story of Christmas. Asha tells the story. The families come in and they reenact it. It's the whole pageantry, and they create a tableau up here on the altar. So this year, as we walked in, it's all the little touches that make an event like that special. The choir was singing Christmas carols, so it set a tone. And Asha was running around frantically getting all the costumes. But just in time, she comes in, puts on her storyteller hat, and she always introduces it the same way. This is Jesus' birthday, so let's celebrate it the way Jesus would want to celebrate his birthday. And the children are listening, and the parents are listening, and the adults are listening. So this year, some of the kids, one of them was a student in Helen and my class. Her name is Shuba. She's quite a dynamic actor, I guess, and loves to be on stage. So when I told her about the opportunity that she could be on stage, part of this pageant, she said, great, I'll be there. So I'm sitting in the back, and she had a small part. She was a shepherd, but they thought because she's so good at delivering lines, they would give her a poem. So they gave her one of Yogananda's poems to recite. And I was sitting back there, and I noticed she was standing here, and her chest was just heaving. And she was having trouble breathing. and she was really having trouble breathing. I thought she was going to hyperventilate. And it got to her part, and she couldn't say the words. She just could not come forward with a poem. And Asha went over and got the words, handed them to her. She composed herself a little bit. She said the poem. The pageant ended with this beautiful baby Jesus is up here. And she ran to the back of the room, and she was crying because she really takes drama seriously. And people were saying, oh, she feels so bad because she missed her lines. And I said, I don't think so. Because I've been up here on some of those Christmas days. And what's really amazing, even for an adult, and I'm a bit of a curmudgeon, and I'm a bit of a bah humbug about Christmas. I kind of, around Thanksgiving, I start to shut down. I can't handle how we got shopping with Christmas and that crazy shopping energy. And I just, but anyway, I've been up here too. And I went up to her afterwards. I said, Shuba, what happened? People were saying, oh, she forgot her line. She feels terrible. I said, that isn't what happened, is it? She goes, no. I said, you were having like a spiritual experience, weren't you? And she goes, yeah. You're standing up here. It's a pageant. It's Christmas morning. But the baby Jesus can come alive to you. It's absolutely amazing. It's 2,000 years later. We live in this modern age. She's Hindu. She's not a Christian. It's not like she has a lot of childhood memories about this. She was just so caught up in emotion over baby Jesus that she could not deliver her line. Well, Asha finishes the ceremony, and the way she always finishes it, she invites the children to come up on stage and maybe bring baby Jesus a gift. And it's all been prearranged. They've been alerted to the fact that they can do this. Oftentimes, Pavani has to go out a little bit into the crowd to kind of break the ice. Maybe grab a child by the hand and invite them up. And sometimes they're just too shy. Well, this year, I don't think the words were even out of Asha's mouth. And this little girl that goes to our school, Pia, grabs her sister's hand and they march right up to baby Jesus. And the little sister just gives Jesus a big kiss. And everyone in the crowd, you just hear this, oh. And I turn around because my son was filming and I wanted to make sure he got it. And as I turned around, all the adults are reaching for Kleenex. And there's just tears everywhere. And that is the power of Christ, even to this day. Now notice that I left out the Crusades. I left out the Inquisition. I left out all those things that happened to this day in Christ's name that give me and probably you the shudders. So Yogananda came up with a great line. He said that Christ was crucified once, but his teachings are crucified daily. So what is this? What is the difference? Why can Handel write this beautiful piece of music? Why can Beethoven write Ode to Joy? Why can Michelangelo do La Pietà? And other people are also sincere about their belief in Jesus, but it goes completely awry. And now what happens with the modern mind when you start talking about avatars? Christ comes, he incarnates, he's this pure being. It's deep Kali Yuga. It's a totally materialistic age. He never writes a book. He never holds office. Most of his life, he's in seclusion, according to the Bible. He comes back for the last 3 years. But what do modern thinking people do with this whole concept of avatar? Well, I was amused. I don't know why it struck me as so funny, but Stephen Hawking, who's this brilliant man, and I didn't know this till I did research for this talk, but he sits in the same chair as Sir Isaac Newton did at this university. He came out with his book recently, and he said that he has figured out that there does not need to be a divine hand in creation. Knowing the laws of physics, he said, Sir Isaac Newton said that God, the divine, started it in motion and that from that point forward, the laws of physics took over. Well, Stephen Hawking says that's not necessary and that there doesn't need to be a divine. I'm not going to get into a debate with Stephen Hawking for obvious reasons. He's brilliant. But science recently came up with this number, and this is something to maybe meditate on. The most recent science estimate for the number of stars that there are is 320 sextillion. So that's 23 zeros afterwards. So that's 10 billion multiplied by 32 trillion. And I'm not mocking Stephen Hawking, but he's sitting there and he has figured out with his little brain that the laws of physics started all this, or that somehow it just started. It just boggles my mind. There was another fellow I was reading, he was interviewed, and he caused shockwaves amongst his community because he was willing to entertain the thought that there was a God. And the interviewer said, kind of like, almost mockingly, like, really? God? You believe in God? And he said, well, it's all how you define it. He said, I could see God as compassion, as kindness, as goodness. That could be my God. I cannot see it as a personal being that I can pray to. I just cannot get my mind around that. And that's where we are in this day and age. So comes the next avatar, is Yogananda. Paramahansa Yogananda incarnated in this ascending Dwapara age, much more emphasis on science, much more emphasis on just we know a lot more. When Jesus came, it was dark Kali Yuga, and it was all might makes right. But now we live in this age, and there's this supposed friction between science and religion, but not to the yogis. And there's really no friction between science and yoga. Because anything they can prove in science would just be the means by which God had done it. So Yogananda comes, and a friend of mine who has a scientific bent says to a professor, what if I told you, and then he listed all the things that are in autobiography of a yogi in the chapter Law of Miracles, and he talks about life trons, and he talks about scientific stuff and the makeup of matter. And the professor said, it's not that big a deal because that information you're telling me you could find in any high school or college science textbook nowadays. He said, what if I told you that it appeared in a book in 1948? He said, now that would be something because we had not discovered any of that by 1948. So how does a Yogananda know these things? And what does he do when he comes? It's a small thing, Yogananda's work still. I mean, an autobiography of a yogi has sold millions of copies. But still, relatively speaking, it's the Bill Gates, it's Steve Jobs, it's Obama. These are the people that are still up there. It's Stephen Hawking's. Yogananda's work is small and it's just seminal. But he comes and he starts a school, he starts a World Brotherhood colony, and he starts to teach people that it has more to do with your level of consciousness than what religion you say you belong to. And the emphasis on him, he said, was to unite all religions. So rather than putting the emphasis on I'm a Christian, or I'm Jewish, or I'm a Muslim, or I'm a Hindu, the emphasis in Yogananda's world is really what is your level of consciousness? Because these great ones tuned into Jesus, some of them, and have done amazing things. Frank Laubach is a Lutheran minister, and he went to the Philippines and did an amazing work just by practicing the presence of Christ and communing with Christ constantly. Yogananda comes, it's much more kind of scientific in its own way, and it's all about meditation, yoga, proper diet. He talked about everything. He talked about the astral world, the causal world, and it was that we were ready to get this message now. So I had a very interesting experience a few months back. I had the highest of the highs and the lowest of the lows at the same moment. The San Francisco Giants had... You knew I was going to get there at some point. The San Francisco Giants had gotten into the playoffs on the last day of the season. And I thought, I'm happy. I don't need any more than that. But then they got by Atlanta. And now I'm like, okay, this is great. But now we go up against Philadelphia. They get by Philadelphia. And I can't even watch the games. I'm too nervous. And I cannot bring myself to watch it. But they get the last out against Ryan Howard. He swings and misses, and there's that finality. It's like the Giants are going to the World Series. And it was surreal for me, because it's been so long waiting for the Giants. But then it even got better. We go against Texas. Now, Texas is this huge hitting team, and we don't stand a chance, and we're just, you know, with this ragtag team, and how are we ever going to beat Texas? And so we go through the Texas series, and we beat Texas, and we win the World Series, and that last moment when they win, I did watch the last pitch, and it was surreal. I just froze. Now, my friend Surendra, I told him ahead of time I was going to call him out on this, but right around that time, he gave Sunday service, and he said, you know, whether the Giants win or lose doesn't matter. But he's wrong. He's so wrong on that one point. Now, as I said, there's this tragedy waiting to happen. So I come the next day, and I'm in this bubble of just 56 years of waiting, and my dad used to take me to the game, and I remember the moment when the doors at Candlestick opened for the first time, and you see the green field, and it's all this childhood stuff, and I took my son out there when he was 5 weeks old to a doubleheader, and and it's all been purged now. It's all gone. But I get the news that day that my cousin, who's 19, he's at a party in Hawaii, and tragic accident, he dies. And it sends a shockwave. So I have this, people are coming up to me congratulating me about the Giants, but at the same time, I'm thinking about my cousin and his son, and just like that. It was just horrific. And like I said, it just sent this major shockwave through my family. So we have the memorial services scheduled, and it's up in Sonoma County, and I rent a car, and I drive up, and I get there early, and I'm picturing maybe a crowd like this for the memorial. I haven't had any contact with this boy, but his father, who's been coming to service here, I'm very close with him. We're first cousins, and I get there early, and I expect maybe 50 people. Well, the crowd starts to arrive, and it arrives, and this kid was magnetic. And there was maybe 800 people crammed into this church. And my cousin's a policeman, so there's all these Irish policemen from San Francisco. His brother's a fireman, so there's all the fire department. Then all my family shows up. And it's all this large, extended Irish family. Cunny, Dugan, O'Houlihan, O'Leary, McSweeney. And we're all there. And what it is, I think, is that we're just so much in a state of shock that we're actually extremely receptive. And we're just, our egos have taken a back seat. And we're just there for one reason, and that's to give support to Chris and his wife, the mother of Patrick. And so the Catholic priest gets up and he gives a talk, and it's very good, and he knew Patrick, so it was personal, and it was touching, and it was good. But it always leaves me wanting more. And that's where Yogananda's teachings comes in. He tells you specifically what happens when you die. He talks about karma. He talks about the astral world. It all makes so much more sense than waiting till the last day. And I don't in any way mean to put down this priest, because like I said, he did a wonderful job. But then my brother was asked to speak, Ananta. And Ananta gets up and he gives a very short talk about how the soul lives, Patrick is fine, everything's going to be okay. It's just that we miss him, but that he's okay. And that's what Yogananda taught. And then he read the astral ascension ceremony. And in that moment, it brought so much solace to that audience. All different religions, agnostic, atheist, Catholic, ex-Catholic, everything. But you could just feel it in the room. And afterwards, everyone poured outside, and it was just so blessed. It's so odd that two of the highest points of my life, spiritually speaking, are at funerals for young people. Because I think what happens is people just completely drop their guard, open themselves up entirely to the divine, and then the divine can flow through. So these are, you know, a wide range of stories, but it's our job as either disciples of Yogananda or just truth seekers to attune ourselves to these avatars. And Jesus has been gone for 2,000 years. He can be as alive today as he was back then. Yogananda was much more recent. His work of uniting world religions, of teaching Kriya Yoga, of getting people to meditate, of just de-escalating all the sectarianism and all this insane, you know, fighting about things like that, it's really going to be, and he predicted it will spread like wildfire. People that have been with Ananda, you know, Ananta once made a joke, it's a slow starting fire. You know, you pick up the paper today, riots in Tunisia, riots in Egypt. What could it lead to? And we all know, I think, without even dwelling on it, that times are going to get tough. You just pick up the newspaper. So we can access these avatars. It's not something up on a shelf or like, oh, wow, it's really amazing. Babaji, the deathless avatar. It's not like a circus, the spiritual path. It's more about getting serious about it, attuning yourself with these avatars. Yogananda is the great teacher, and he would take you to another path if this is not your path. That was always his promise. If I'm not your guru, I'll take you to your guru. But it does take opening up inside and maybe praying and maybe doubting and maybe asking questions. Like, how can you possibly be 326 trillion stars and there's some being out there that's running all this? Maybe you have serious doubts. Maybe you're scientific based and it's more than you could ever get your mind around. But it's something you can explore. And that's the other beautiful thing about these teachings. Master didn't give a lot of dogmas. It's not like a normal church where you subscribe to a set of beliefs and then you're in. It's more like you start wherever you want to, you explore through your own being and through your own experience.